Tax Resolution Ninja Show, where we feature the top experts on all things tax to help you understand, navigate, and resolve all your tax-related issues. Now, let's get started with the show.
Hi, I'm Alan Rolnick, the host of the Tax Resolution Ninja Show, where we feature guests and talk about issues from all walks of life, from taxes to health to economics to personal finances, sales and marketing, employment, and many more that are too numerous to name. Past guests on the show have included Jeffrey Schneider, Eric Cohen, Adrian Miller, Sylvie Heyman, Alex Kuhn, Evan Raven, Samuel Wiener, Robert Hernandez, and Nancy Schick. This episode is brought to you by Tri-State Tax Resolution. Owe the IRS or your state tax department money, or have not filed a tax return for more than 2 years? The IRS and the state tax department are looking for you. They want to throw you a party. This party is not to celebrate your birthday, anniversary, engagement, or wedding. The party is being made to levy your wages up to 90%, take your Social Security check up to 85%, seize your bank accounts and other things that you own, and revoke your passport. To stop this party in its tracks, you need to call the Tax Resolution Hotline at Tri-State Tax Resolution, 718-841-7317. You see, Tri-State Tax Resolution runs a tax emergency room that helps people and businesses permanently resolve their tax problem. Tri-State Tax Resolution will do the heavy lifting for you, and you will never have to speak to an IRS or state tax agent. If you owe the IRS and or the state tax department where you live and work, give Tri-State Tax Resolution a call. They will resolve your tax problem permanently, and you will not have to go to the party that the IRS and your state department of taxation are throwing for you. To stop the party, call Tri-State Tax Resolution at 718-841-7317 or visit their website at www.tristatetaxresolution.com. I have here with me today Jerry Nyland. She is the president of Trade Press Services, a specialized marketing communication strategy firm that provides writing, media outreach, and general marketing support. Under her leadership, Trade Press Services has worked with more than 500 business-to-business clients, from startups to Fortune 500 companies, and more than 650 editors of trade magazines, journals, newspapers, and web production companies. Prior to joining Trade Press Services, she was a principal in a marketing consulting firm for 15 years. Jerry helps companies and individuals accelerate business growth by increasing visibility in the marketplace, developing a competitive strategy, communicating more effectively with customers and prospects, and gaining recognition as an expert in their field. With more than 30 years' experience as a sales and marketing professional, entrepreneur, consultant, author, and educator, she has excellent credentials and a proven track record of success. Jerry has broad-based business experience that includes advertising, customer service, marketing, publicity, new product development, outbound sales, training, and consulting. She's a highly organized, detailed-oriented professional resource and focused on the bottom line. Her specialties include writing, editing, publicity, marketing, media outreach, communication strategies, and marketing communications. Jerry, thank you for joining me on my podcast. So tell me, how did you get started with all this?
Well, I'm what they call a serial entrepreneur. I realized at a very young age I wasn't suited for the standard operating procedures that existed in the 60s, where you have to punch a clock. That's not my makeup. And so I opened a nursery school and preschool kindergarten in my early 20s. And from there, I joined a marketing consulting practice. And after about 6 years, I opened Trade Press Services. It was an offshoot of the marketing consulting practice, because what we discovered is that most of our clients, who were B2B clients, really wanted publicity. This was before the internet. And they wanted to get published in magazines because they knew that would position them as thought leaders, even though that term wasn't used way back then. And it would give them a competitive edge and really help them, define who they are and what services and products they offered in a way that would be meaningful to their target audiences.
So, I mean, how did you go from running a kindergarten, from a nursery school to marketing? What was the connection?
I had a little stint as an employee along the way, and that's where I really learned sales and marketing. Working for somebody else that specialized in events for financial institutions. And as part of that, I met my partner who had a marketing consulting practice. And he realized that he couldn't grow his company unless he brought on associates. So he offered me a partnership and he was my mentor for many years. He trained me. He taught me what customer service meant. He taught me all about marketing and sales and product development, and I'll be eternally grateful for that.
After how long did you work for him, and when did you start?
We had a partnership for 6 years, and he went off and did some other things. I went off and did some other things, and then we came back together, and he said, I have an idea for a new company, but you know me, I'm a visionary. I'm not the guy to do it. And I have confidence. I think you can make this new business concept work. And inside a week, I had Trade Press Services up and running.
And what is Trade Services?
1995.
Okay. And what exactly do they, how do they help the business owner?
Well, Trade Press Services was started to write articles and get them published for clients. That's all we did at the time. And as I said earlier, the thought behind that was that if you became a published author, you were recognized in your industry. It was more effective than advertising because people trusted what they read in magazines. And so you were looked at as a leader or an expert in your field. So that's how we started. And we've certainly increased with the success of the internet. We've added different kinds of writing services, additional media outreach, which includes social media coordination. We help clients get speaking engagements. And in addition, we provide general marketing support for companies whose internal resources are on overload.
Smallest company that you would work for?
Well, funny you should ask. We work with individuals. This year, for some reason, there are many people who are seeking what is called EB-1 visas. That means they're here in the United States and they want to continue to live and work here, and so they need green cards. And as part of the process, they need to show their competence and why they should be allowed to stay. And so being a published author is one of the requirements for the application. And so those are sole individuals who pay for our services out of their own pockets. And then, of course, we've worked with companies as large as Capital One and IBM, or 3M, I'm sorry, and companies that are much larger with hundreds of employees.
You act as the ghostwriter? I mean,
yes.
Okay, so you write the book for the person.
We write books, we write newsletters, we write articles, we write white papers and customer success stories, email campaigns, any type of written word that gets the right message to the right audience at the right time.
And does the client provide you with the detail, or do you?
The client is the expert in the field, and our freelance writers are expert journalists. They know how to listen, they know how to research, they know how to craft meaningful content in a way that it will be well received by the target audience.
All right, but you don't do any of the research for a client's book or anything like that.
No, we would supplement what they do if they're writing an article. And if they were writing an article, for example, on the cloud, and they had some ideas and some research data already, we would take that and we would do our own research to expand on that and see if there's some additional information that would strengthen or broaden the content of the article.
Most of the books that are written by professionals I mean, are they actually written by the professional, or are they ghostwritten?
You know, I don't know how many are ghostwritten, but I know that we've worked with clients to write 5 books so far. And some clients give us visibility in the published books and some clients don't. So I don't really know how many books that are written are actually written by authors. I would think that when it comes to nonfiction, there would be more ghostwriting done. But when it comes to fiction, you would find that most of the books are written by the authors themselves.
Okay. Any high executives go through this? You know, big fighting like 500 in the Fortune 500?
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
Sometimes an author will have a co-writer. So it will say that it's joint authorship. And the joint part of it is the freelance writer.
Okay. So I noticed in doing some research myself that you wrote an article on emails. And I'm just going to try to pull it up because I had this the other day.
We blog every week. And on our website, our blogs are categorized by subject matter. And we really try and go very broad and providing valuable information that will help marketers do a better job.
Okay, and you're, I guess, a co-writer in a blog called 8 Email Marketing Mistakes Most Business Owners Make. What are the eight marketing mistakes?
Well, I'm sorry, I can't remember all of the ones that we quoted in that, but I think that one of the biggest mistakes that email marketers make is they try and make it all about them. They make it very self-serving and they don't provide content that's relevant. They don't use a good subject line. They don't have a call to action. It may be too much like an advertising piece and it doesn't provide value.
I noticed one of the talks about writing long or rambling emails. How long should an email be if you're sending it out?
You know, people differ on their opinion, but one of the things that we tell writers is write in the active tense, not the passive tense, and try and keep your sentences to no more than 14 words so that it's not a run-on sentence. Drop the adverbs, you don't need them.
Okay. So there should be short sentences, basically?
Short sentences in the active tense.
And how long should the actual email be?
Well, it depends on what your goal is and whether or not it's part of a active campaign. And we call it a drip campaign where you might have 4 or 6 or 10 emails planned and where are you in the cycle? So your first one would be longer than some of the others. But I think a good rule of thumb is keep your emails under 200 words.
Okay. That using subject line to, how is one used, how does one take advantage of the subject line? I mean, one of the problems I have when I do my emails is I never know what to put in the subject line.
Well, you can test it out. There is a service where you can test out headliners and pick the one that's most effective. And what we're finding these days is if you start with a how-to, that generates a lot of engagement and interest.
Okay. And then when you say forgetting to personalize your emails, What does that entail?
Well, it could mean that you don't start with a greeting to an individual.
Okay.
So instead of saying, "Hi, John," it says, you know, "to whom it may concern," or you don't have a greeting that's personal.
All right. And how does one ask, for, you know, How does one ask for the sale without being obnoxious about it?
Well, you don't always ask for the sale in the first email. You can have a call to action. A call to action might be to click on something for a free offer, or to answer a question, or to be put on a newsletter or email distribution list. The next level up might be to call to schedule a time for a call with a salesperson or a subject matter expert, or indicate a willingness to take a call from a salesperson. And then, you know, it depends on the product or service you're selling, what your close is. You know, people use limited time offers. There are a variety of options that you can use in order to close a sale. You can offer a money-back guarantee. You can ask somebody to check your references. You know, there's a variety of call to actions.
Okay. So the first email that you send out to somebody shouldn't really how does one
what you're trying to identify is pain points. When you send out an email for the first time, you're trying to establish your credentials as a company that understands the pain points that your potential clients have. And that's how the content should be focused.
Okay. So then I found another jumping to another subject. Found another blog, I guess, that you only you wrote. It's called Effective Marketing Knowledge and Strategies for Reaching the Millennial Generation. What's the difference between marketing to the millennials, because they're a tough group?
Well, millennials in general, like alternate and non-traditional forms of communication. So they like texts. They're on social media. They like you to reach them through social media channels. Their interests are different from the interests of baby boomers and generations before that. For example, the environment is one of the main concerns of the millennial generation. They want to be respected. They want to collaborate. They want freedom. So you have to understand their psyches. There's been a lot of books written about working with millennials. And if that's your target audience, then I suggest that anybody who reaches millennials, that they do some reading to find out what the profile is and what their interests are.
Okay, and how are they different than say like Generation X?
Well, I think, I'm not sure about Generation X, but baby boomers want stability and they like traditional approaches to engagement and being contacted. So whether it's email or a phone call, you know, they're responsive to that, or more responsive to millennials who prefer text messaging or social media marketing.
One last question. Have a favorite book?
Pardon?
Do you have a favorite book?
Yes, I do. My favorite book is Dennis Prager's book, Happiness is a Serious Problem, where he talks about the fact that each of us have a moral responsibility to be happy, and that it's a personal choice and decision, and it's based on a sense of gratitude, a sense of spirituality or religion. And I think that book should be in all schools at all levels.
Are you a religious person?
I am not. I have a religious background, but I think I'm more spiritual than religious. I do enjoy some of the traditions from my religion and my upbringing, but I'm not an active member of a organized religion.
Jerry, I want to thank you for being on my podcast. It was a pleasure interviewing you, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you. Listen to my previous episodes, and we'll see you next time on the Tax Resolution Ninja Show. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Tax Resolution Ninja Show. Be sure to click subscribe to get updates on our latest episodes.